You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome, everybody, to tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program. It's Saturday evening, March the 29th. I want to offer an especially warm welcome to those who may be tuning in from the Charleston, South Carolina area tonight. We're making a big fuss over there in the Holy City, the Palmetto State, tonight. And I'm going to tell you all about it a little later this hour. But first things first, Keith Alexander in the studio with a very special guest. Now, we had talked last week as the Political Cesspool's first quarter fundraising drive wraps up on Monday. Monday, last chance for you to get in the contribution to open up the floodgates for those incentives, the special incentive offers that we have as gifts for those who extend to us the love. Always an honor and a pleasure, Keith, when we are able to rattle out all those cities that we did last week. And that was just a small sampling. An equal number have come in this week all over the country. Before I knew we had a very special guest in the studio tonight, I had intended to read a more complete list. But I want to just give you a quick one that came in from Ryson, Arkansas. And this is one, this is a guy that's always listens. He is a tried and true loyal listener, as so many of our friends are out there. Says, James, first I'd like to say congratulations to you and your wife. Children are truly a blessing to any home. I would also like to say congratulations on the 10-year anniversary of the Political Cesspool. You know, James, for someone to speak publicly on behalf of our stock is rare. To do so on a mainstream radio show is very rare. But to do so for 10 straight years is absolutely historical. And he sent in a generous contribution, as so many people have this month, folks. We serve here at your pleasure, and it is our pleasure to serve. And as I mentioned, and I can't say it enough, truly a joy to be able to meet in the flesh those who claim our program as their political voice in the mainstream news. Keith, you've had the opportunity to spend a little bit more time with this special guest than I have over the course of the last 2 days as he has made his way down from New York, the New York City area, to Memphis. Why don't you tell us a little bit about who's in the studio tonight?
Well, if people will recall, last week I mispronounced the name of a city in New York State. And not only was I corrected, the guy actually shows up here in Memphis to correct me. It's called Matt the Copperhead. Matt is a person who is a regular contributor to our blog roll. And he came down here. He's visiting family, and this was en route. So he stopped by, and we've just had a great time this week. He came in, I guess it was on Friday evening. We went out to dinner. Then he stayed at my house. We've had a great time. He's been helping with household chores, and we've been touring the city. We've gone to Forest Park. We've gone to various and sundry other important sites here in Memphis. He's gotten the full treatment as far as, you know, how charming certain parts of Memphis are and are not. So we've taken him all around. I think he's had a great time. I'm going to turn the microphone over to him and let him tell you more about it from his perspective.
Good evening, Cesspool family. How is everyone out there? Hope you're all doing well. It's Matt the Copperhead. And yes, we've had quite the time here with our gracious hosts. And let me tell you guys, when these guys tell you all, come down to Memphis, we'll take care of you, be your part of the Cesspool family, that's absolutely true. It's been a wonderful time here so far. Had the full tour with Mr. Keith Alexander. And I'm here in the Cesspool studio and cannot wait to see what's going to happen tonight.
Going to be a particularly busy show tonight. We've got three outstanding guests. And as I mentioned at the top of the very next segment this first hour, I'm going to tell you why we're making big news this weekend in South Carolina and elsewhere. But first, Matt, it's always an interesting story. And I know I got a few minutes to spend with you last night. We went out to a local Italian restaurant near my home, and I always am interested to hear why or what exactly led you to the show, what you think about the show in general, and what you think after hanging out with our motley crew here in the Volunteer State.
Well, James, there's one word to that. That's honesty. Honesty and courage brought me to this political cesspool. As one person recently, when you read the letter, this person was so kind to send a donation and a letter forth. It's for 10 years, this program has been stating the truth, and that is so important in today's age, and especially for our people, our stock, and as an advocate for our people in this age.
Well, Matt, I certainly appreciate you saying that. And to a man, folks, every time we have had the chance to spend a little FaceTime with listeners, you just can't say enough about them. I mean, we try. It always falls short. But I appreciate you saying that. And, you know, you're coming all the way from the New York City area. You have family that lives in the Mid-South. But it was out of your way to come to Memphis by a couple of hours to make this little pit stop. And you actually extended your stay longer than even you had originally intended to once we let you know that we could receive you.
Yes, it was more than happy to do so. Fortunately, I have the time. And have the opportunity, and why not? Couldn't pick a better place to spend the last couple of days, and the heritage and the history here is so rich. Forrest Monument, Forrest's gravesite, General Nathan Bedford Forrest was phenomenal to go see that. It's a moving experience, folks, and all listeners out there, if you have the chance to come to Memphis and see real Memphis, do.
We're going to give folks that opportunity later this year, of course, but Keith, I want to thank you on behalf of our staff and crew for being such a gracious host. I've been so busy this week with the birthday of my daughter and some other things that it was just a horrible week for me schedule-wise, but I'm glad Matt was able to stay. I'm glad you were able to host him. I'm glad y'all have had such a great time. I wish I could have shared it in its entirety, but folks, Salt of the Earth audience, for Salt of the Earth hosting staff, we go together. It's a grassroots show. It's us against the world, but we're on the right side. We have the right friends and we have the right enemies. And, you know, here I am with a gentleman from New York. You know, this isn't a regional show. I mean, we're proud to be Sons of the South, but we have an international audience, and it's so great to meet people. You know, this is true diversity here in the studio tonight. But Matt the Copperhead, a little bit older than me, a little bit younger than Keith, has two kids, a wife, hardworking guy, an all-American all the way around, right, Keith?
Yep. Exactly. Just as you said, salt of the earth, a good man who works for a living, supports his family, and does everything right, turns the corner square, crosses his T's, dots his I's. In other words, a typical political cesspool fan.
Well, it is for our people and for those kinds of people that we fight. The dispossessed majority, the working class member of the founding stock that absolutely has no voice in the mainstream media, save this network, save the shows on this network. And let me tell you something, folks. I'm going to give you a perfect example of why this show and this network is so important, and it involves the story that we were involved with, and it includes the Lieutenant Governor of South Carolina. What's happening there? You're going to get the full scoop right after this.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
A backpack is more than just a bag, it's a statement. Whether you're a student or a professional, are traveling the world or commuting to work, Teton Sports offers a wide variety of backpacks, each of which is lightweight and durable. The book bag backpacks weigh only 1.5 pounds and come in solid pink, blue, red, or black. The session bags have eye-catching designs, adding a touch of style in pink and white or in black. Each is great for kids or adults who need a versatile, resilient, and eye-catching bag. The professional and the executive are sleek, sturdy backpacks with numerous uses. Whether you're hiking in the mountains or packing for an important business trip, these bags have plenty of room. Not only are the backpacks comfortable and lightweight, but they're large enough to fill all your needs. Teton Sports also offers sleeping bags, duffels, tents, cots, camp pads, and more to ensure a quality outdoor experience. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman's Warehouse, Dick's Sporting Goods, Wholesale Sports, or visit TetonSports.com.
Yeah?
Did you want to see me, sir?
Well, I did, but now that I do, I'm not so sure.
Sir?
Johnson, I got a mission for you that could change your life.
Oh, good, sir.
It involves traveling halfway around the world without so much as half a clue of where you're going or what you're going to do when you get there.
Situation normal, sir?
Uh-huh. Right, I'll be leading this mission, Johnson, so I'll be telling you what to do.
You, sir?
That's right, Johnson, and I say first things first.
Oh, good plan, sir.
And what I say is first is food. Always remember that, Johnson. Food is a big deal.
Sir, my brother-in-law can get us a really good deal on some surplus MREs.
Johnson, if you've got half a brain and that empty head of yours, you'll call the freeze-dry guy like I did. That food is better for you, it rehydrates faster, and it's good, Johnson. And it keeps for up to 30 years.
Will we be gone that long, sir?
Well, I hope not. Now get your supplies organized and meet me down to the pier at dawn on Sunday. We sail at sunrise.
Yes, sir.
This adventure is brought to you by the freeze-dry guy. Call 866-404-3663 or visit freezedryguy.com.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Okay, folks, we're going to address this thing head on. I received, as I wrote on our website yesterday, a few emails from reporters on Friday inquiring about an interview that we conducted in 2007 during our Confederate History Month series of that year. The guest was then State Senate member Glenn McConnell of South Carolina. He represented the city of Charleston in the South Carolina State Senate. He is now the lieutenant governor of South Carolina. But what's getting him scrutinized in the media this week was that a couple of days ago, he was selected to become the next president of the College of Charleston. He was a state senator. Now he's lieutenant governor. He's about to be president of the College of Charleston because he's not going to be seeking re-election. I wouldn't either if I had a $1 million job lined up for me. But despite the national interest, there's not much of a story here at all. We invited him to be on the show, and he accepted, just like many elected officials and assorted celebrities have done over the year. Had a very cordial talk with him about Southern history. And I don't know much about Mr. McConnell. I'll know a little bit, but he certainly seemed to be a very polite gentleman, and I wish him the best in all of his future endeavors. I suppose the current rumblings in the press are due to the fact that McConnell has always been very outspokenly pro-Confederate and pro-Southern, and the creative descriptions that the Southern Poverty Law Center bestow upon my radio program have been fuel for the fire of those who are out to do a witch hunt on McConnell. The SPLC, of course, as everyone knows, has made a hobby over the years of attacking Christian and conservative organizations like ours. Even the American Family Association graces their absurd list of hate groups. Focus on the family, all these groups. They're haters. The Singing Nuns of Spokane, Washington. That's not a joke. I mean, they're on there. Here's what they had to say. Now, I'm going to read the majority of the SPLC's report on this verbatim. Just because I want to be completely transparent, open, and honest before I offer my rebuttal. Yesterday, and this is the SPLC writing, we explore the neo-Confederate record of South Carolina Lieutenant Governor Glenn McConnell, who has recently been selected to be the next president of the College of Charleston. McConnell has made promotion of Confederate history and culture a hallmark of his 3 decades in public office. Now, keep in mind, this was a guy that's been in office for 3 decades. So it's not as though he's an unknown commodity in South Carolina politics. This explains how, the SPLC continues, in 2007, then-state Senator McConnell came to appear on a notorious white nationalist radio program, The Political Cesspool. Notorious, of course, Keith, the textbook definition is to be widely and unfavorably known. Well, I certainly would agree that we're widely known, but not unfavorably, according to the feedback we receive from normal people. What was that, Keith? I don't know. But according to the program notes, the SBLC writes, McConnell appeared during the Confederate History Month to discuss the legacy of the crew of the H.L. Hunley submarine, as well as the flying of the Confederate flag on the grounds of the state capitol. He was described as very much pro-South. The political cesspool, hosted by James Edwards, declares in its mission statement that it represents a philosophy that is pro-white and wishes to revive the white birth rate above replacement-level fertility. On the same page, you'll find an endorsement from segregationist Bob Whitaker. Now, they dismiss Bob Whitaker as a segregationist, but what he really is was a Reagan administration appointee. He was a professor and a Capitol Hill senior staffer appointed by President Ronald Reagan himself. Now, like a lot of conservatives, I don't think Reagan was necessarily Jesus, but to dismiss him nominally as a so-called segregationist. No, his official biography was he was a Reagan administration appointee, yes, and he has endorsed our program, and we're proud about it. The program has hosted a who's who of racists. Edwards believes that secession is a right of all people. You know, it was good enough for the founding fathers. Yes, I do certainly stand by that. As a part of Edwards' effort to honor Confederate veterans, he brought on McConnell during Confederate History Month. McConnell told the Charleston Post and Courier yesterday that the only people still debating the Confederate flag at the South Carolina Capitol are extremists. I'm not going back to open up old wounds. Yet there he was in 2007 attacking the NAACP over the issue on a white nationalist radio show. They refer to us as that about three or four times in this article, even though we have never once in 10 years referred to ourselves as such. McConnell, asked by Edwards to lay out the history of the Confederate flag debate, said that the state hoisted the Confederate flag to mark the centennial of the Civil War. Nobody had a problem with it until the 1980s when the NAACP all of a sudden discovered they were offended by it. The article goes on. McConnell said he's not going to return to that controversy. What's sad, McConnell said, is the irresponsible grandstanding that threatens to unravel the fabric of mutual respect and to divide our state for decades to come. Well, isn't that rich? The SBLC concludes there's nothing like going on a white nationalist program to nurture the fabric of mutual respect and attack the NAACP for fanning the flames of intolerance. So that was pretty much their entire article. Now, I was contacted yesterday by reporters from ABC News and the Charleston Post-Courier, the daily paper there. I spent about an hour on the phone with different reporters. They asked me about the interview with McConnell. They asked me about the SBLC referring to our show as white nationalist. They asked me about having stated to see the white birth rate reach replacement level fertility. Now, here is exactly, I'm going to give you a verbatim quote, no more, no less, of exactly what I said to the reporters. I said, I reject outright the Southern Poverty Law Center's description of my work. I've never once in 10 years of broadcasting referred to myself as a white nationalist. Now, that's not to say that I necessarily am opposed to the term. If people want to refer to themselves as that and they believe in the same things we do, that's fine. I just think it carries a negative stigma and a negative connotation. I just consider myself to be a conservative who holds very traditional viewpoints. I continued, I have a deep love and respect for my cultural heritage. I advocate in the defense of my family. I'm proud of who I am. I'm proud of who my ancestors were. Rational people would consider that to be perfectly normal behavior. You asked me about my desire to see the white birth rate reach replacement level fertility. Well, of course I do. Only genocidal monsters would take issue with such a statement because the alternative is to see those with European ancestry eventually become extinct. I don't want to see that happen. I respect human diversity and think that all people, including whites, should live well and prosper. The SBLC has been attacking our radio show, I told the reporters, with false and ludicrous accusations for years. It's just part of the game. Every now and then, you will find a legitimate group of thugs monitored by the SBLC. I mean, there are people out there that claim to have some of the same issues that we hold, but going out and tattooing a swastika in your forehead and getting drunk and committing crimes, I mean, that's, you know, these people aren't on our side. So, you know, if they want to be monitored, that's fine. And, you know, by the way, the SBLC should monitor all the black gangs, because I tell you, for whatever true skinheads there may be out there, they're not a half, not a tenth, not a hundredth of the problem that these black mobs that WorldNet Daily talks about in terms of the trouble that they cause. But I said most of the hate groups that the SBLC list these days, or at least a fair number of them, are just normal Christian folks who righteously oppose homosexual marriage or hold traditional values on certain issues now declared by the left to be taboo. I went on to mention that the Political Cesspool has received awards for our work from the city of Memphis, that I've been named an honorary city councilman. I mentioned being a regular contributor to CNN in 2007, which was the same year McConnell appeared on our show. And by the way, CNN always referred to me as a conservative, nothing more, nothing less. I mentioned establishment news outlets. Like, I even did the homework for them because I know reporters are lazy. They're not going to do their work. I did the homework for them. I sent exposés, not written by right-of-center folks, which it would have been fine if it's true, and it is, but I sent them exposés written by their contemporaries in the media. The Baltimore Sun. The Baltimore Sun has discredited, thoroughly discredited, the Southern Poverty Law Center as a fundraising hustle, as a radical left-wing, you know, witch doctors. I sent it all to them. Even mentioned some of the other high-profile guests, and there's no shortage of them who have been on the show. And here's the thing. Not a word of it was published. Not one line, not one quote. Nothing from me at all. I read these stories this morning after they were printed. Not one word. Now, if I'd have gotten on there and said, you know what, yeah, Glenn McConnell was on our show, and let me tell you something. I hate N-words. I hate Jews. I think we need to have a mass genocide. You know, if I'd have said something, if I'd have fit the caricature that the SPLC has painted of me, they would have printed every word of it. But because I took issue with the characterization, the false characterization, that I offered a heartfelt and well-reasoned defense of our issues, they didn't publish a word. I spent an hour on the phone with reporters, not one word. But they printed everything the SPLC wrote about us as God's holy writ. I'm going to come back with it. I'm going to play you a clip that the SPLC sent to the press right after this.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Each week, the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
The Occidental Quarterly fills a unique niche in bringing together scholarly articles on a wide range of topics that are mired in political correctness elsewhere. It is edited by Professor Kevin MacDonald, who's no stranger to listeners of the Political Cesspool. There are quite a few reasons for the precarious state of our civilization and our people, but one of the main ones is that we have lost the intellectual and moral high ground to a cultural elite that is hostile to our people and our culture. Those of us who are politically aware must understand that the elites dominating culture and the political process in the West are intellectually and morally bankrupt. TOQ is the key.
Digital download subscriptions are only $30 a year. Subscriptions by first-class mail are only $60 a year. Go to TOQOnline.com and click on Subscribe Now. In addition to receiving fascinating and informative articles, you will also be supporting the work of scholars who are part of a community defending our people and our culture with the highest level of integrity and intellectual sophistication. That's TOQOnline.com. Subscribe now.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Folks, I know better. I know better than to give interviews. It has long been my policy for years now to not do an interview unless it's live television or live radio. And print journalism is the worst because the only reason, when we get radio, when we get interview requests, rather, outside of something live, almost inevitably, they get sent to the trash bin of my mailbox. But because I knew they were going to write a story about this anyway, and because they were attacking a guy who had appeared on the show, and I knew they were going to write what the SPLC said about our show, I figured I would at least offer a rebuttal for what it's worth. But again, not a word of it was published because I didn't fit the caricature. They say, you know, a well-spoken, articulate guy talking about these issues. We can't print that. That doesn't fit the stereotype. And these articles, if you do a Google News search for Glenn McConnell, political cesspool, you read the ABC News report, you read the Charleston Post, Courier, a significant portion of it was just copy and pasted off the SPLC's blog. It's amazing. Reporters long ago stopped even pretending to be objective. You know, you think a news story from a credible source, like a daily paper. Now, we know they're not credible, but, you know, a lot of people think they are. You would think that if it's a story with a controversy, you're going to have one side and then the other. The SPLC says this, but Edwards says this. No, they don't do that at all because they long ago ceased even pretending to be objective. Now they just see their jobs as being the enforcers of political correctness. They pretend as though there is no other side. The entire article presents the case as if you, like McConnell, are sympathetic towards the Confederate cause and the Confederate flag, you are an evil person. There was not one word there that offered any other viewpoint than that. Now, what kind of media is that? But here's the thing. The SPLC, and I want to get to this, they cut and pasted from our archives about 5 minutes of the interview with Glenn McConnell, the interview in question, presumably what they thought to be the most incendiary moments of that interview, which, by the way, I wasn't even in the studio that night. Not that facts matter. It was actually Winston that conducted the excellent interview with McConnell. I was out that evening. I wish I'd been there. But anyway, let's listen to it right now if we can. Let's listen to it right now, and you tell me where the hate is and where the controversy is. If we can pull that clip up. I should have given our producer a heads up that I wanted to go to it right now, but we'll see if we can get it in the queue here. And, you know, that's pretty much the whole story. I don't have much more to say other than that after we hear this clip. That's the treatment the press gives you and gives our issues, gives our side. And that's why these outlets such as Liberty News Radio, the Political Cesspool, are so vitally important. Do we have that clip ready? I guess they're still trying to find it there in the network. Keith, a quick comment from you while we're getting the clip.
I'll do some tap dancing while we're waiting for this clip to come up. The thing is, when you deal with left-wing critics like the Southern Poverty Law Center or the Anti-Defamation League or any other group, everything they say is taken as gospel by the mainstream media. And furthermore, there's no explanation for these pejorative terms that they toss around, like white nationalists. Pray tell, what is a white nationalist? What do they mean by a white nationalist? I would assume it means that you think that there should be an all-white nation. We've never advocated that on this show. That's not realistic. It's not something that is, you know, that would be somebody's crazy pipe dream. And we don't deal in pipe dreams. We try to, what we actually describe ourselves as are paleo conservatives. In other words, old line conservatives.
We are pro-white.
And, you know, we are not, we have a sense of solidarity with our race, just like every other race has advocates who have a sense of solidarity with their respective races. That's diversity, folks. I thought we were supposed to celebrate diversity. Apparently, you're not supposed to celebrate diversity when any of the celebration bleeds over onto the white race. That's the only thing I can assume from this. That's, you know, does that make me a white nationalist? Of course not. You know, I think there was one time where they were calling us neo-Nazis. I don't even know what that is. Is there a Nazi party anywhere anymore? I don't believe so. We're certainly not part of that. Never have been, never will be.
All their terms are interchangeable. Racist, xenophobe, bigot, white supremacist. I mean, they just use them as interchangeable. They don't try to define them. But, no, you're exactly right, Keith. And we are, of course, unequivocally pro-white. This is a pro-white show. We will never back down from that. But there's nothing wrong with that either. Everyone should have a pride in their tribe. Everyone should be proud of who they are, the way God made them. We believe that, and we don't seek to take away the rights and freedoms of other people to do that without fear of repercussion. Certainly, if we had been black or Jewish or any other group, if we had been homosexuals and we were proud of that, we'd get accolades from the Charleston Post and Courier today and from the SPLC, by the way. Do we have the clip ready yet? And if we don't, we will get to it in the second hour after Devlin appears. Apparently not yet. So we will get to it later. We'll get to it later in the show. Keith, anything else you want to say with regards to this before? You know, the timing of this was actually a great plug for Confederate History Month. This was a guest that appeared in Confederate History Month 07. Confederate History Month series for the Political Cesspool 2014 begins next week.
Well, apparently the left thinks that no white Southerners or no one anywhere should have any sympathy whatsoever with the Confederacy or the Confederate cause. You should have no identification with it. Everyone ought to be unanimous in their condemnation of the Confederacy, of the Civil War from the Confederate viewpoint. And they have created this false template which says that the Civil War was all about slavery. The South was for slavery, and the North was uniformly against slavery. Of course, this is a, you know, bold-faced lie. It's balderdash. If you look at the historical record and look at the original documentation and actual history, you know that's not the truth. We're going to demonstrate that throughout Confederate History Month, which is in April. Every show that we have will devote at least 1 hour to debunking the left wing's mythology about the Civil War. But apparently that makes you a big target in the eyes of the left. They will no longer tolerate anything except complete and utter condemnation of not only the Confederacy and the Confederate cause, but any individual associated with it. For example, now Robert E. Lee is worse than the Boston Strangler, apparently, okay? All right, so, you know, just hold on tight, folks. You know, we're going to get into all of this coming month, but the SPLC is up here plowing the ground for us, telling everybody that if they are a decent human being, they've got to hate Robert E. Lee now, who is probably one of the most exemplary human beings ever to trod the face of the earth.
It's just comical, though. I hate to get back to this, but I'm looking at these articles that were written, and I don't even need to read what the Charleston Post and Courier wrote because it's the SPLC's article. it's just that, and, you know, and they treat this group as if it was, you know, it's been so thoroughly discredited by so many. Well, they present them, of course, as the, you know, the venerable civil rights organization, Southern Poverty Law Center, and just dismiss us entirely, not even offering a word, a quote, a line of anything that I said. I should have known I was in trouble. Now, as I said, I have a general distaste and distrust for the media for obvious reasons, but to make matters worse, the guy, it was a guy that interviewed me for the paper there in Charleston, the guy's name was Skyler. So, you know, when you have a guy named Skyler, that just is another point in the wrong direction. But, Keith, let me ask you this, and this is neither here nor there, and I'm not poking too much fun at the guy, but how would you think Skyler is spelled? And I know nobody can help what their name is, but it just, you know, normally guys with this kind of name that I've met have something in common. Skyler, how do you spell Skyler?
Taking a wild guess, I'd say S-K-Y-L-E-R.
Or S-K-Y-L-A-R, or some variation. It's one of these new age names. How about S-C-H-U-Y-L-E-R?
That's not Skyler.
It is.
That's Shuler. Okay, look. You know, these people don't even know how to spell their own names. That tells you what you're dealing with. furthermore, I'm sure this was some junior under assistant intern who they gave the unenviable task of interviewing James, and they had no intention of printing anything that James said. In other words, they're basically just parroting what the SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, tells them. And, you know, that is a total abdication of their duty to the public as journalists. They're not fair. They're not unbiased. They're just the opposite. And they wonder why daily newspapers are shriveling on the vine and dying throughout the nation. It's because people can no longer trust them to tell the truth or to be fair.
Again, folks, and we'll get into this later on in the last half hour of the second hour, the reason why independent news sources like ours are so important, the reason why we need to be supportive is because there is no... The media speaks now with one voice. I don't care if it's the Charleston City Paper or some of these other outlets across the country. When it comes to an issue that deals with a racial animus or an issue involved and steeped in political correctness, they all speak with one voice. I'm for diversity. I'm for freedom of speech, and I'm for hearing. We got to wait for a break.
Many of you have heard me talk about my Vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is all this Vigor stuff about? Well, Vigor is defined as zest for life, your strength in body and mind, your energy levels. It's kind of all wrapped into a term called Vigor. Would you like to improve your Vigor score? Well, you got to first take the free test. Get a hold of Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com or call Kurt Cosby at 801-669-2211. I took the test, got a 13 out of 32. Horrible, huh? But I worked on it with Kurt with some natural help and healing, and before you know it, now I've got an astounding 29 out of 32 on the Vigor score. Can you tell by the way I talk? Oh, yes, my zest for life has never been better. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. That's 801-669-2211. And take your free Vigor test today, and you can learn where you stand. And then you can work on improving it and take the test again. And, oh, compare the results. You will be delighted. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com or 801-669-2211 for your free Vigor score test today.
We fought. We learned. We struggled. We won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center. Where heritage and responsibility instill character. Where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental. Where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're back here at the Political Cesspool. And if we ever you know, want to ramp up our ratings and stir up controversy, not only with SPLC, but with our own fans, there is no better prescription for doing that than having our next guest on the show, because one thing that Roger Devlin never does is disappoint. He hits the nail on the head, and I mean, he stirs up mainstream conservatives, he stirs up ladies, he stirs up men, and he stirs up the entire landscape with his incisive and somewhat controversial views on the battle of the sexes, and in particular, what has happened to the institution of marriage since the advent of the sexual revolution, which is an integral part of the triumph of the left over the past 70 years. Roger, it's great to have you back on the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Well, let's dive right into it. We went into a full exposition of what I consider to be your seminal article, Sexual Utopia in Power, in the last two shows. We dissected it, we demonstrated it, and now we move on to your other voluminous writings on related topics. Tell us about them.
When we finished last time, we were talking a little bit about the family wage system, the kind of economic system we had before women entered the workforce. I'd like to maybe start by taking saying a little bit more about that.
Okay, well, let's just set the table here. The family wage was supposedly a progressive liberal initiative.
That's correct. I'm going to get to that.
And it was supposedly a great triumph for liberalism back in the 19th century when family wage was achieved for the benefit of the population generally. But now it has been reversed. It is now the worst thing that ever happened to humanity besides, the Confederacy maybe. But tell us what happened.
All right. Well, let's put it this way. Ask yourself this question. Has the entry of women into the workforce made us better off? Now, at first glance, you might guess that it must have, because how could a family not be better off with two incomes instead of one? But in fact, it doesn't work that way when large numbers of women enter the workforce. What happens is that it increases the supply of labor until the market for labor is glutted. So when the market is glutted for a commodity, the price goes down. The price of labor is just what we know as wages.
It's wages, supply and demand, right?
Yes. Everybody ends up getting paid less. So if you're the first woman going to work in a society of stay-at-home mothers, then yes, you will greatly increase the family income. But when all women start working, there's no net benefit. Everyone just gets paid less.
Basically, what you do, you have two people earning the same amount of money adjusted for inflation that one person did back in the bad old days of having a family wage.
Right, right. The feminist slogan of equal pay for equal work is very effective as a political slogan. When you first hear it, you wonder, well, how could anybody be against that? What the feminists don't tell you is that everyone's pay goes down as a result. By making women and men equal in the workplace, you make them both worse off, so that couples are no better off than before. And, of course, children are much worse off because they don't get to spend as much time with their mother.
It seems like with almost all feminist initiatives, it is the same with this wage or wage equality argument.
Yeah.
The real people that benefit from it are lesbians.
Yes.
And married women have been somehow hornswoggled and bamboozled into supporting it, but it really doesn't serve their interests in the least, does it?
No, it benefits, as you say, lesbians and women who are not married and don't want to get married. But it doesn't benefit the great majority of women, and it sure as heck doesn't benefit our children.
But for some reason, feminism and the feminist movement never gets any of the blame for the dissatisfaction that women feel with the fact that they have to go to work now.
Right.
And that their husbands can't earn enough money to support them. You know, I've noticed that a lot of women nowadays want the best of both worlds. They want all of the opportunities that affirmative action and the and feminism have granted right. them for, let's say, becoming judges, for having careers in the professions, for access to elected office on one hand. But then on the other hand, they still expect their husbands to out-earn and out-prestige them.
That's
in
right.
the workplace, and if they don't, well, then they discover that their husbands are lacking in some way, or that they have, right. quote-unquote, outgrown their husbands.
Right.
And this fuels dissatisfaction with marriage.
Yes.
But no women, or no women's group that I know of, with the exception of a few lone wolves that write books occasionally about it, the vast majority of the organized women's movement never takes feminists, the National Organization of Women, or any other feminist organization to task about this dissatisfaction. It's always directed
toward men.
Towards men, absolutely.
Yes. Yeah, I have actually written someplace that feminism is a movement that thrives on its own failures, because it can always blame its failures on men. I'd like to say a little more now about what you were saying earlier, that the family wage was a progressive cause in earlier times. It's not new to have women working outside the home. It's something that happened a great deal during the early 19th century, at the time of the Industrial Revolution. And the capitalists were always in favor of having women work. Why wouldn't they be? It means they get twice as much labor for the same price.
And, you know, having women and men both pursuing workplace careers
right.
is very corrosive to the fabric of marriage. One thing right. that I've noticed is that the best career situation is where a man and a woman work together in the same business, with the woman being the chief assistant and the man
oh, yeah.
being the person in charge.
In a family business, that can work, yes.
And, you know, that's what we had back in the times of, you know, the founding of this nation, when 90% of the population was involved in farming or other agrarian pursuits. You had a man
right.
and woman working together on their own farm, pursuing the same economic goals together, and it was at that point that marriage was perhaps at its strongest.
That's right. And where it broke down was when capitalism began to spread. Factories saw women and even children working.
And women went to the left, men went to the right. You know, in other words, you know, they both went, they went to different plants, or they rarely
right.
Had any type of cooperative
right.
effort at work together. And that had the effect of weakening marriages. And, of course,
yes.
that's exactly what the feminists secretly want. They want marriage to be weak.
Right, right.
And they want marriage, and the left wants marriage to be weak, because they know that the nuclear family is the building block of society. And if you
right.
can weaken the building block, the foundation, then the whole edifice is in jeopardy.
Right.
Of society.
Okay. So the family wage system was a victory for the working class movement, the labor movement. The Socialist International, that's the organization Karl Marx was involved in founding, approved a resolution calling for bans on the employment of women. Not
Don't tell Betty Friedan.
Women, outright bans. They viewed working women as the equivalent of strike breakers who were helping the capitalists achieve their ends at the expense of the working class. In the later 19th century, agitation for a male family wage was successful, and in fact, as I was mentioning at the very end of the broadcast last time, women in large numbers withdrew from factories and from work outside the home and began to be supported by their husbands in greater and greater numbers during the latter part of the 19th century. The historical record leaves no doubt about it in England and Belgium, to name just the countries I happen to know about. So remember this the next time you hear a feminist complacently saying that, well, we can't turn the clock back to the time when women stayed at home with the children. It has been done. It was done in the industrial countries in the 19th century.
And furthermore, it was done in the 20th century by the feminist movement itself, by the feminists. They're the ones that turned the clock back to the time before the triumph of the family wage movement.
Right. So we're living with some of the same defects of the early industrial system now that we had had transcended earlier.
In the 50s, it was supposed to be so oppressive. You know, if you don't believe it, just tune in a movie like Pleasantville.
Yeah.
Betty Friedan found it oppressive. But of course, yeah. Betty Friedan, if she was not of a lesbian, she missed a wonderful opportunity. And, you know, likewise, you know, it may have been oppressive to lesbians back then, but it was not oppressive to the vast majority of women who enjoyed their married lives back in the 50s. And
right.
The divorce rates back that up.
Right. And family households that still only have a male wage earner have experienced a considerable decline in real income since the 70s. In just the 20 years beginning in 1973, male wage earner families saw their income decline by 14%.
Okay, Sam, Roger, hold it right there. We've got to have a word from our sponsors. We'll be right back after these words from our sponsors, ladies and gentlemen.
Right.